Chapter 71. The Ball. It was in the warmest days of July when, in due course of time, the Saturday arrived upon which the ball of Monsieur de Morcerf was to take place. It was 10 o'clock at night. The large trees in the garden of the Count's hotel threw up their branches towards the azure canopy of heaven, studded with golden stars, but where the last mists of a storm which had threatened all day yet glided. From the apartments on the ground floor might be heard the sound of music, with the whirl of the waltz and galop, while brilliant streams of light shone through the openings of the Venetian blinds. At this moment the garden was only occupied by about 10 servants, who had just received orders from their mistress to prepare the supper, the serenity of the weather continuing to increase. Until now it had been undecided whether the supper should take place in the dining-room or under a long tent erected on the lawn. But the beautiful blue sky, covered with stars, had determined the case in favour of the lawn. The gardens were illuminated with coloured lanterns, according to the Italian custom, and, as usual in those countries where the luxuries of the table are well understood, the supper table was loaded with wax lights and flowers. At the time the Countess de Morcerf returned to the rooms, after giving her orders, many guests were arriving, more attracted by the charming hospitality of the Countess than by the distinguished position of the Count. For, owing to the good taste of Mercedes, one was sure of finding some arrangements at her fête worthy of relating, or even copying in case of need. Madame Danglars, in whom the events we have related had caused deep anxiety, had hesitated in going to Madame de Morcerf, when during the morning her carriage happened to cross that of de Villefort. The latter made a sign, and the carriages having drawn close together, he said, "You are going to Madame de Morcerf's, are you not?"
"No," replied Madame Danglars. "I am too ill."
"You are wrong," replied Villefort significantly. "It is important that you should be seen there."
"In that case I will go."
And the two carriages passed on towards their different destinations. Madame Danglars, therefore, came, not only beautiful in person, but radiant with splendour. She entered by one door, at the same time that Mercedes appeared at the other. The Countess took Albert to meet Madame Danglars. He approached, paid her some well-merited compliments on her toilet, and offered his arm to conduct her to a seat. Albert looked around him.
"You are looking for my daughter?"
said the Baroness, smiling.
"I confess it," replied Albert. "Could you have been so cruel as not to bring her?"
"Calm yourself. She has met Mademoiselle de Villefort and has taken her arm. See, they are following us both in white dresses, one with a bouquet of camellias, the other with one of myosotis. But tell me."
"Well, what do you wish to know?"
"Will not the Count of Monte Cristo be here tonight?"
17, replied Albert.
"What do you mean?"
"I only mean that the Count seems the rage," replied the Viscount, smiling, "and that you are the 17th person that has asked me the same question. The Count is in fashion. I congratulate him upon it."
"And have you replied to everyone, as you have to me?"
"Ah, to be sure, I have not answered you. Be satisfied, we shall have this lion. We are among the privileged ones."
"Were you at the opera yesterday?"
"No."
"He was there."
"Ah, indeed. And did the eccentric person commit any new originality?"
"Can he be seen without doing so? Elsler was dancing in Le Diable Boiteau. The Greek princess was in ecstasies. After the cachucha, he placed a magnificent ring on the stem of a bouquet and threw it to the charming danseuse, who, in the third act, to do honour to the gift, reappeared with it on her finger."
"And the Greek princess, will she be here?" "No, you will be deprived of that pleasure. Her position in the Count's establishment is not sufficiently understood."
"Wait. Leave me here and go and speak to Madame de Villefort, who is longing to engage your attention."
Albert bowed to Madame Danglars and advanced towards Madame de Villefort, whose lips opened as he approached.
"I wager anything," said Albert, interrupting her, "that I know what you were about to say."
"Well, what is it?"
"You were going to ask me if the Count of Monte Cristo were arrived or expected."
"Not at all. It is not of him that I am now thinking. I was going to ask you if you had received any news of Monsieur Franz."
"Yes, yesterday."
"What did he tell you?"
"That he was leaving at the same time as his letter."
"Well, now then, the Count."
"The Count will come, be satisfied."
"You know that he has another name besides Monte Cristo?"
"No, I did not know it."
"Monte Cristo is the name of an island, and he has a family name."
"I never heard it."
"Well, then I am better informed than you. His name is Zaccone."
"It is possible.
Here's a Maltese."
"This is also possible.
The son of a shipowner."
"Really, you should relate all this aloud. You would have the greatest success."
He has served in India, discovered a mine in Thessaly, and comes to Paris to form an establishment of mineral waters at Auteuil.
"Well, I'm sure," said Morcerf, "this is indeed news. Am I allowed to repeat it?"
"Yes, but cautiously. Tell one thing at a time, and do not say I told you."
"Why so?"
"Because it is a secret just discovered."
"By whom?"
"The police."
"Then the news originated
at the prefect's last night.
Paris, you can understand, is astonished at the sight of such unusual splendour, and the police have made inquiries."
"Good. Nothing more is wanting than to arrest the Count as a vagabond on the pretext of his being too rich."
"Indeed, this would doubtless have happened if his credentials had not been so favourable."
"Poor Count! And is he aware of the danger he has been in?"
"I think not."
"Then it will be but charitable to inform him. When he arrives, I will not fail to do so."
Just then, a handsome young man with bright eyes, black hair, and glossy moustache respectfully bowed to Madame de Villefort. Albert extended him his hand.
"Madame," said Albert, "allow me to present to you Monsieur Maximilien Morel, captain of Spahis, one of our best, and above all, of our bravest officers."
"I have already had the pleasure of meeting this gentleman at Auteuil, at the house of the Count of Monte Cristo," replied Madame de Villefort, turning away with marked coldness of manner.
This answer, and above all the tone in which it was uttered, chilled the heart of poor Morel. But a recompense was in store for him. Turning round, he saw near the door a beautiful, fair face, whose large blue eyes were without any marked expression fixed upon him, while the bouquet of myosotis was gently raised to the lips. The salutation was so well understood that Morel, with the same expression in his eyes, placed his handkerchief to his mouth. And these two living statues, whose hearts beat so violently under their marble aspect, separated from each other by the whole length of the room, forgot themselves for a moment, or rather forgot the world in their mutual contemplation. They might have remained much longer lost in one another without anyone noticing their abstraction. The Count of Monte Cristo had just entered. He advanced through the crowd of curious glances and exchange of salutations towards Madame de Morcerf, who, standing before a mantelpiece ornamented with flowers, had seen his entrance in a looking-glass placed opposite the door, and was prepared to receive him. She turned towards him with a serene smile, just at the moment he was bowing to her. No doubt she fancied the Count would speak to her, while on his side the Count thought she was about to address him. But both remained silent, and after a mere bow, Monte Cristo directed his steps to Albert, who received him cordially.
"Have you seen my mother?" asked Albert.
"I have just had the pleasure," replied the Count. "But I have not seen your father."
"See, he is down there, talking politics with that little group of great geniuses."
Just then the Count felt his arm pressed. He turned round. It was Danglars.
"Ah, is it you, Baron?" said he.
"Why do you call me Baron?" said Danglars. "You know that I care nothing for my title. I'm not like you, Viscount. You like your title, do you not?"
"Certainly," replied Albert, "seeing that without my title I should be nothing, while you, sacrificing the Baron, would still remain the millionaire."
"Which seems to me the finest title under the royalty of July," replied Danglars.
"Unfortunately," said Monte Cristo, "one's title to a millionaire does not last for life, like that of Baron, Peer of France, or Academician. For example, the millionaires Frank and Pullman, of Frankfurt, who have just become bankrupts."
"Indeed?" said Danglars, becoming pale.
"Yes, I received the news this evening by a courier. I had about 1 million in their hands, but warned in time, I withdrew it 1 month ago.
"Oh," exclaimed Danglars, "they have drawn on me for 200,000 francs.
"Well, you can guard against it. Their signature is worth 5%.
"Yes, but it is too late," said Danglars. "I have honoured their bills."
"Good," said Monte Cristo. "Here are 200,000 francs gone after—"
"Hush! Do not mention these things," said Danglars.
Then approaching Monte Cristo, he added,
"Especially before young Monsieur Cavalcanti."
After which he smiled and turned towards the young man in question. Albert had left the Count to speak to his mother, Danglars to converse with young Cavalcanti. Monte Cristo was for an instant alone. Meanwhile the heat became excessive. The footmen were hastening through the rooms with waiters loaded with ices. Monte Cristo wiped the perspiration from his forehead, but drew back when the waiter was presented to him. He took no refreshment. Madame de Morcerf did not lose sight of Monte Cristo. She saw that he took nothing, and even noticed the movement with which he withdrew from it.
"Albert?"
she asked. Did you notice that?
What, mother?
That the Count will never accept an invitation to dine with us.
Yes, but then he breakfasted with me. Indeed, he made his first appearance in the world on that occasion.
But your house is not Monsieur de Morcerf's, murmured Mercedes. And since he has been here, I have watched him.
Well?
Well, he has taken nothing yet.
The Count is very temperate.
Mercedes smiled sadly.
Approach him, said she, and the next waiter that passes insist upon his taking something.
But why, mother?
Oblige me, Albert, said Mercedes.
Albert kissed his mother's hand and drew near to the Count. Another salver passed, loaded as the preceding ones. She saw Albert attempt to persuade the Count, but he obstinately refused. Albert rejoined his mother. She was very pale.
Well, said she, you see he refuses?
Yes, but why need this annoy you?
You know, Albert, women are singular creatures. I should like to have seen the Count take something in my house, if only a morsel of pomegranate. Perhaps he cannot reconcile himself to the French style of living, and might prefer something else.
Oh, no, I have seen him eat of everything in Italy. No doubt he does not feel inclined this evening.
And besides, said the Countess, accustomed as he is to burning climates, possibly he does not feel the heat as we do.
I do not think that, for he has complained of feeling almost suffocated, and asked why the Venetian blinds were not opened as well as the windows.
In a word, said Mercedes, it was a way of assuring me that his abstinence was intended.
And she left the room. A minute afterwards the blinds were thrown open, and through the jessamine and clematis that overhung the window might be seen the garden ornamented with lanterns, and the supper laid under the tent. Dancers, players, talkers, all uttered an exclamation of joy. Everyone inhaled with delight the breeze that floated in. At the same time, Mercedes reappeared, paler than before, but with an immovable expression of countenance which she sometimes wore. She went straight to the group of which her husband formed the centre.
"Do not detain these gentlemen here, Count," she said. "They would prefer, I should think, to breathe in the garden, rather than suffocate here, since they are not playing."
"Ah!" said a gallant old general, who in 1809 had sung Partons pour la Syrie. "We will not go alone to the garden."
"Then," said Mercedes, "I will lead the way."
Turning towards Monte Cristo, she added,
"Count, will you oblige me with your arm?"
The Count almost staggered at these simple words. Then he fixed his eyes on Mercedes. It was but the glance of a moment, but it seemed to the Countess to have lasted for a century, so much was expressed in that one look. He offered his arm to the Countess. She leaned upon it, or rather just touched it with her little hand, and they together descended the steps, lined with rhododendrons and camellias. Behind them, by another outlet, a group of about 20 persons rushed into the garden with loud exclamations of delight.